Welcome to Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. I'm your host, Tyson.
And I'm your host, Porter.
And we're both writers, editors, and part-time filmmakers who love superheroes. Welcome to our show. Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Today, we are going to be breaking down Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, a very polarizing film in the Snyderverse. We just watched the extended cut, and we're going to break it down for you now. Porter, would you like to start?
Yeah, I have always somewhat enjoyed this movie. We went and saw this together back when it came out, and I remember we had a great time watching it then. I honestly, once I saw the extended cut, I haven't really gone back, so I can't fairly criticize the theatrical version. But I definitely think, I mean, the reason I never went back was because the extended cut was such an improvement, in my opinion, but still has its flaws. But I overall think it's a more hated movie than it deserves.
I'm with you there. It seems like a lot of these movies, especially surrounding kind of the Justice League feels, just improve with the extended cut. I mean, it definitely tacks on a lot to an already very long movie, but they tend to flesh out the story in a very satisfying way.
Yeah, I feel like the extended cut definitely gives you a lot more to work with as far as what Lex Luthor's plot is to like get Batman and Superman to fight all along. And it just makes more sense. Like you said, it's more satisfying and it's not as random and just kind of shoehorned in like it feels in the theatrical version. I do wish that either version would have kind of fleshed out Batman as a whole more. Like, we obviously see, we know why he hates Superman, right? I mean, that opening scene is great. He's Bruce Wayne. He's helping people out. He's, you know, first one. He's on the front lines helping people. I wish we would have gotten more of who he was as a person. Like, he's really sad. He's really jaded. And this version of Batman is not what people are used to seeing. And I think the film could have benefited if they gave you a bit more of an insight to why he is the way he is.
And that's fair. Yeah, he's a controversial Batman, let alone it being a controversial movie. But we were talking and we think, you know, he's not that bad.
Yeah, I like him. I mean, I think the suit's cool. I think Ben Affleck does a great job playing like a cool Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. And granted, you know, he's the main character of this movie, and we'll try and keep it focused from a Superman perspective. We'll definitely break down elements of the Snyderverse and just Batman in general in later episodes. But I don't know. I'm a fan of the Ben Affleck Batman.
I think he is sidelined enough that it becomes clear that this movie was started in development as a Man of Steel sequel, like Man of Steel 2, I mean, because technically it is the sequel. From what I've read, it seems like they really wanted to play catch up with the MCU going on.
Yeah.
Because it was at its like peak around this time, 2016. And they really were like, okay, we got Man of Steel 2. Let's now try to like get the universe going. And
yeah.
It tries to fit a lot into its third act. Because those first two acts are like a slow burn. You can kind of tell that's what they want the movie to be about. It's kind of this more nuanced debate on superheroes as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the third act, it's just like, it's the universe, it's superheroes, right?
Yeah, it's like really establishing Batman and Wonder Woman and how they work together. And that's a great point that it is really like the ending is purely a prequel to the Justice League.
Yeah, like maybe a movie like this would have felt more in line if like Wonder Woman had come out prior, and even Aquaman, right? Which Aquaman came out after the Justice League, which was not the move because a lot of people liked Aquaman. It was a big movie.
Yeah. And
I think Justice League would have gone over a lot better if they didn't try to rush it, right? That's the problem.
That was one of my issues, and that was a critique I had at the ripe age of like 14, right? It was just they really just played their hand too early. They were really trying to just jump that big Avengers kind of release really, really too soon. And they in Justice League, and once again, we'll get into this later, they just tried to fit in a mini backstory for everybody, and it doesn't work as well when you haven't really given them chance to, like, develop the story.
Yeah, it's tough when, like, people like you and I, who grew up on, like, say, the Justice League cartoon show, which is great, but we know the characters, we know their dynamics, we know the relationships. The average moviegoer, or let me rephrase that, like, the average person that likes to go to the movies, and superhero movies in general, right, they're not necessarily nerds, because if only nerds went to go see superhero movies, they would not be making the amount of money they are, right? You've got to get the general population in there.
Right.
And sure, like, the nerds will know, like, okay, I already know who Aquaman is. I don't need to get his origin. But most people are going to be like, who's this fish guy? Like, what?
Right.
What's going on there?
Well, that's definitely one of Marvel's strong suits in their universe, and kind of why it makes me excited for James Gunn to be heading up this new DC universe. But yeah, I mean, speaking of backstories, the beginning of this movie is kind of a cool intro where they, like, give you a very cinematic and subtle showing of Batman's backstory over, like, a credit sequence.
Yeah, you're right. It kind of cuts between the funeral and the actual night that his parents died, with his dad being played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan from The Walking Dead, which is a fun touch because he also played the comedian in Zack Snyder's Watchmen, which is kind of fun.
But. Yeah. So kind of cool to get that little name drop in there, even though he's not around for very long.
Right.
And we get a lot of the iconic scenes, right? The pearls, the death of his parents. We get him falling into the well, right? All the bats. And we kind of get, you know, the established Batman story, but you do make a good point that it would have made more sense maybe just for his character to flesh out how he got from just that little child to, like, this really dark and possibly the most, like, jaded Batman that we've seen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he quite literally kills people in this movie. Maybe not necessarily, like, he doesn't shoot them, right? He does in that, like, nightmare sequence, but that's a whole other topic. But
oh. No, but he's brutal in this. You're so right. Like, he's especially violent, branding criminals and sentencing them to death, essentially.
Oh, yeah. And, like, you have the bit when he breaks through the semi with the car. Like, that dude's head was right where his tire was, like, making contact.
Oh, yeah.
Ain't no way he survived that.
No, it's over. So, yeah, we get some really interesting setups for Batman right there. And then we are thrown straight into the conflict with him, obviously, kind of hating Superman because of the whole Man of Steel moments, and him, you know, trying to save who he can, being Bruce Wayne. And they kind of just cut away from that, like, really tense and cinematic. I'm going to keep saying that. That was a beautifully done sequence.
It's great.
Out to the kind of the meat, the main conflict that kind of gets the ball rolling, which is Lois being a reporter out in the Middle East.
Yes, you are correct. The main conflict of this movie is Lois being a reporter. it's the kickoff, right? It's like a weird framing sequence where Lois goes to do a report, to do an interview with a suspected terrorist. Like, she asks him, "Are you a terrorist?"
Right.
And the Jimmy Olsen CIA agent kind of ruins things.
Yeah, I just need a tangent here.
Oh, dear.
there's been some hate for Jimmy Olsen, how he was portrayed in this universe, and I'm kind of on that side, if I'm being honest. It's like, it's not necessary that he's redheaded. I mean, that's like it's not a huge thing, right? I maybe would have preferred it, right? I think the thing that killed me is the fact that, like, his character has nothing to do with Jimmy Olsen other than the fact that he's with Lois in that moment.
Right, and holding a camera.
Right. He's a CIA operative. He, like, messes up the whole thing. And, right, he's just, like, a very attractive... He's not nerdy, right? Like, he has nothing that exemplifies Jimmy, as we all know him. And he dies, like, immediately. So I feel like there was no need to call him Jimmy. It would have been better just to have left Jimmy out of this universe in general.
I can see where you're coming from. I personally don't really care for Jimmy Olsen in any edit. Like, I'll probably like him in the new movie because I love the actor that's playing him, but all other past iterations of Jimmy Olsen, like, could not care less. But That being said, I do understand where you're coming from, and I can understand why that would be frustrating.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I've decided after this movie, it's not Amy Adams that I have an issue with. I think it's the character of Lois that I have a hard time with. The way that she tends to drive the plot forward is typically getting in danger and Superman saving her. She's a very nosy reporter, and that's just not a world that I understand, always like going in for the scoop. I joke about that a lot.
Yeah.
But it's just not like, it doesn't feel like a proper motivation to me, because it just seems dumb to like risk your life all the time just to like tell the story for.
Well, it makes you wonder if she is so willing to risk her life for the story because she kind of in the back of her head knows that Superman can save her.
Right. Which is a point of conflict later in this. We kind of find that that's like the reason that Superman shows up, and that's like leads to a ton of controversy, which kind of gets the ball rolling for Lex's master plan.
Right. Yeah. Cause yeah, the framing, they frame him saying that he killed all those people for no reason. And it, yeah, the senator publicly holds him accountable, saying like, hey, you can't just do whatever you want. We need to have a talk. And I think this movie's strong suit is the discussion about superheroes and super beings and whether we need them or how we should view them.
Mm-hmm.
Like that montage of like, should there be a Superman, where you got all the famous people, you got Neil deGrasse Tyson. Like, it's a compelling argument. I think it's a great discussion that people are having on both sides. And I'm glad that it seems like they're continuing it in this new movie. I really think the older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, I have zero clue how I would react, right? As a kid, you're like, that'd be awesome. Like, right. You kidding me? But like, now that I'm older, I'm like, yeah, that's quite an insane thing, you know?
It's a complicated issue. Yeah. No, I appreciate them tackling it like that. And I love the comparison to mythology in this movie and in some of the animated and live actions that we've gone through so far. There seems to be kind of a reoccurring theme of comparing him to like some of the Greek gods and some of the myths around that, right? Stealing fire from the gods. And I think it's just interesting for them to be grappling with these ideas of like, what do you do with like an all-powerful, infinite, seemingly infinite being who can kind of just do what he wants, right? I love Lex's line that says, I decided from a young age that God can't be all-powerful and all-good. It's one or the other.
Right. It's a good line. It's a good, like, it's a thinker, right? Okay, speaking of Lex, I know that a lot of people have an issue with him being played by Jesse Eisenberg and the way that he is played and written. I can understand that. That being said, I appreciate the new take on him, right? Because you've got the Gene Hackman and then the Kevin Spacey Lex Luthers, who are very like billionaire mogul, like real estate crap, right? I appreciate that this one's kind of a more ADHD driven, like, and technically he has the same goal as Batman, to make sure that Superman can be stopped.
Right.
It's purely just a case of who do you want to have the kill switch, right? Do you want it to be in the hands of Luthor, or do you want it to be in the hands of Batman?
Right. And their goals, right, are a little bit different in the sense that Batman just wants to stop Superman from being all powerful, and Lex wants to stop Superman because Superman can stop him from being all powerful.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Jesse Eisenberg as Luthor?
I love him as an actor, just in general, so it's very easy for me to appreciate his take on Lex. But I have to admit, it is starkly different from any of the Lex Luthers that we've seen so far. And even like many of the cartoon interpretations, right? He's kind of a smaller, skinnier, right? The ADHD, it's a very different Lex. Not as calm, cool, and collected. His kind of scattered, fragmented mind, I think, lends itself to like the genius that they kind of build Lex's character around. I think it works.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it kind of plays more into the modern idea of what a billionaire looks like.
Totally.
I mean, it helps that he played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, so you kind of have that idea of, oh yeah, that's what a really modern rich person looks like.
Right. No, I think it works well. And at the very least, outside of a Lex perspective, he's a very compelling villain in this movie.
He is. Like, as we've discussed, his plot to kind of frame Superman, piss Batman off, it is clever. Like, it's a very inventive plot, and I think that it works like 90% of the time. I think there is like a 10%, like, I don't know, but I'll just give you the benefit of the doubt, because the other 90%, I think it works. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on like his plot?
In the extended edition, it makes a lot more sense.
Right.
Which I duly appreciate. I think it's immensely clever to pit two superpowers against each other. It almost seems like he kind of wanted Batman to take the kryptonite, right? Like he seemed in that moment when he's, I'm jumping ahead here, back at the wreckage of his lab, you could see like a small smile start to creep onto his face when he sees that Batman has like looted him.
Yeah, I think that was the plan all along. And I think it's fitting that he's not only like tech smart, but I like that this Lex also knows how to play people.
Totally. Totally. They kind of play the psychotic insanity card, right? That he like just he thinks differently, and he has all these like grand aspirations that are just like so maniacal and crazy for kind of regular people. And oh my gosh, I love Jesse Eisenberg, but I think the way that it's played and the way that you see so many of these characters react to his character, like the genuine fear that he brings across, the way he's able to bend Superman to his will, the way that you see the genuine fear on this congresswoman's face when he kind of plays that moment, right? That dark twist with the jar. I think the way he plays the character works well because of how everybody else plays around it.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's that like playing off of the character is what makes it so exciting. Totally. Speaking of psychos, dude, they kind of have like a Joker Easter egg thing with Jason Todd, Robin,
yeah,
being murdered by him, but they don't really touch on it like ever in this universe.
There are moments, several in this movie, that makes me sad that the Snyderverse kind of got cut off when it did, because it feels like there were chances to be built up, right? They always could have done a prequel Batman, right? Kind of fleshed out Ben Affleck's character and maybe even covered, because that was a scary monument, right? With the spray paints over the suit, like that was fantastic. And the whole bit with the dream sequence, right? I feel like leading up to that in the future could have been really cool.
It's a bummer. And I mean, when we talk about the Snyderverse in the far, far future, we can talk more about like the Joker Batman relationship that we see in that like futuristic scene. But mm-hmm. It's tough because, again, you and I, we're going to see that Robin suit with the Joker writing on it and go, holy crap, that's Jason Todd. That's probably why he's so cynical, and kind of connect those dots. Again, the average person is not thinking that way. They're just like, oh, it's probably the Joker.
Right, they'll see like the ha-ha. They can assume the Joker. Batman makes the line about, you know, seeing crazy clowns dressed in... and people, you know, could connect those dots. Essentially, they're aware that he's the main Batman villain, but you're right. Like, it is kind of deeper cuts for the comic nerds.
Like, they could have had a convo with Alfred where he's like, I know you're afraid of losing people with Jason and your mother, Martha. Like, that line right there could have made a lot of things make a lot of sense for that third act.
The very least made it like compelling enough for the normos to like give it a Google later on.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of which, Jeremy Irons as Alfred.
So good.
Oh my gosh.
He's so good.
I love Alfred as a character, and I have yet to see an Alfred that I dislike, but oh my gosh, Jeremy Irons, I feel like was just fantastic for that role.
Yeah, this modern era, we've been spoiled with great Alfreds. I mean, we got Michael Caine in the Dark Knight trilogy, who was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get Jeremy Irons in this universe. And then you get we've only had him once, but Andy Serkis in the new Batman did a great job.
Fantastic. So the main like plot points after this war is Lex trying to get his hands on some of the Kryptonian wreckage out of the Indian Ocean. There's a large chunk of kryptonite that's, you know, surfaced, and he is working with Senator to, you know, secure its safe passage into the States. And it all seems to be according to plan. You made a great point about him being able to play people. It all seems to be coming together quite nicely. until the senator kind of approaches him in this really scary scene, and she says, "I'm not letting your visa go through."
Yeah, it's kind of like the first scene we get to see Lex be intimidating, or not intimidating. He's just like, you can tell there's some cogs turning where he's getting kind of evil, where he is obviously upset about it. And he's just kind of like, oh, yeah, you see that picture, like my dad, he died and I kept this room exactly how it was. And later we get a thing of like kind of a side comment of him being like, oh, you know, hiding away from, or nobody saved me from my dad's fist, right? Assuming they had a very complex relationship with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this painting, and it's such a cool line, and it's a cool visual where you get this, these angels coming from above and these like demons coming from below. And then he's like, yeah, I should flip it upside down, because we all now know that devils come from the sky. And it's, mm-hmm. it's a cool line.
It's a awesome. Great line. And like I had mentioned to you earlier, it was a great moment in the trailer. That line hit so hard.
That this movie had some good trailers. That was a fun time to be like a hyped DC fan as a kid.
Oh my gosh. Couldn't agree more. We're kind of thrown into Lex just kind of schmoozing the officials at his big old party, where we get the first few members of the Justice League meeting each other.
Yeah, we see Wonder Woman for the first time, and she's awesome. But, but yeah, we get like this fun interaction between Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne, and it's just, it's goofy, but they kind of clash ideas for a second, and then it's nothing too exciting. Like, it's fun. Nothing super happens.
Sure, but I think it's a great planting
for that's a good main point.
Conflict, right? You get them in their not super personas, kind of just arguing philosophically for, you know, the pros and cons of each vigilante doing what they do.
I was just thinking about it. If later on when Superman confronts Batman and he calls him Bruce, do you think he knew at the party that he was Bruce Wayne because he could like hear Alfred? Or do you think it's when he confronted him at, when he like crashes his Batmobile, he just looked through the suit and was like, oh, it's Bruce.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. That would make a ton of sense.
Yeah. Cause like, I guess he could obviously assume that like Bruce Wayne, there's more to him than meets the eye.
Sure.
I don't know if you would know that he was Batman at that moment though.
Clearly he was suspicious when, you know, he could hear Alfred talking in his earpiece. I thought that was a great little scene, right? You could see him like turning his head, kind of noticing.
It's cool.
Oh my gosh. We'll get into this later. But that scene where he crashes his Batmobile into Superman, that was intense.
It's cool. I mean, they're like confrontations prior to the big battle. It really is just the party and then the Batmobile and then the big battle.
Like, yeah,
they don't meet a lot in this movie.
No, but I think that's what's brilliant about the writing in this movie and about Lex's plan in general, is it's all about, kind of like you said, that slow burn, right? Those little needly things that Lex puts into place where you can see kind of Batman and Clark on their own having like these experiences that kind of just are really molding their minds to like, this man is dangerous, right? He needs to be stopped.
Yeah, I mean, because like when they meet at the Batmobile, it's a really cool scene. We get to see Batmobile action. It kind of feels like the obligatory, like, hey, it's a superhero movie, we do need to keep people like excited with action, and really our action set pieces are at the end of the movie, so we need to throw something in the middle to keep people's interest throughout.
Right. And there hasn't been an insane amount of action up until this point, right? There have been some really like quick and powerful moments, but this is kind of the, honestly, one of my favorite scenes. It's kind of just a huge moment where it's like, oh yeah, this is a superhero movie.
Right, exactly. Because it can get pretty bleak. And while I love the philosophical stuff about superheroes.
Right, all the politics.
Yeah, it's not 100%. Like, it is nice to kind of have the fun superhero-y stuff.
Right. And Batman's overarching goal. Now, at this point, right, he's decided Superman is an issue. And he hears about this kryptonite. And he's like, well, that's what I want, right? I'm going to get that stuff and I'm going to stop Superman with it. So he figures out the scary name White Portuguese,
right,
is actually a ship, right? He figures out where it's going and he kind of loads up. And just we can discuss this in further episodes, but I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the Batmobile in this movie?
I like it. I think it's a cool design. I like the sleekness of it. And, you know, remember we came from the Tumbler, which is a sweet Batmobile, mm-hmm. but that one's kind of more of like a tank.
Totally.
It was kind of cool to have this one be, it feels like it was specially crafted for this Batman purpose. You know?
It's kind of the beginnings of that, like more accessible, almost like sports car sized Batmobile. We definitely get that in the Batman.
Right.
And it's kind of just a car that is, cartoonish is the wrong word, but it's just more, it makes more sense for the hero.
Yeah, I mean, this Batman is definitely more established. It's definitely reminiscent. It's heavily based on the Batman from Dark Knight Returns by mm-hmm. Frank Miller, which we've both read. And it's a classic. A lot of people love it. It's not like 100% my cup of tea. I'm not a huge fan of the 4x4 pages, panels and pages. That's a lot. I'm more of a 3x3 guy, but no. I don't know. It's a lot for me, but I do enjoy the story, and this Batman is definitely heavily inspired by, with, you know, the bigger stature, the big symbol. We literally get a reference to it when he's running away from Doomsday and he grapples to that ledge and the lightning bolt hits. Like, it's clear.
So cool. Yeah. So cinematic.
It's just, I think it would have landed better with people if they'd have just tweaked a couple things, like made extra care to either, like I said, show why he's so cynical, like have conversations with Alfred about that, or just go the extra mile and just not have him kill people. You know, like, because I was noticing watching this, a lot of the stuff where he is like for sure killing people, it's an intentional choice, right?
Oh,
it's
for not, sure,
it doesn't feel like oversight.
No, and it's pretty clear that, like, he doesn't care that much.
Well, and it doesn't help that the previous Batman movies, the Dark Knight trilogy, like, his whole thing, and they drill it into you, is that he does not kill. And then to go from that to this, the public's like, what the heck?
It's starkly different. And once again, that's why I think, like, Ben Affleck's Batman is kind of the darkest, because even in the Batman, we don't get that kind of energy, even though it is, like, technically a darker movie, like, visually and vibes with the villain and everything. Ben Affleck's kind of just takes it an extra step.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this whole sequence is fantastic with the Batmobile. It's really exciting. I've always loved, like, car chases and movies. So, yeah, getting to see him use all of his gadgets, all the, like, weapons firing, and, yeah, it's a truly exciting scene. And one of the interesting parts about this whole Batmobile sequence, I think, is it ending with, you know, him running into Superman and Superman just telling him essentially to just, like, stop being Batman, you're done, right? This really scary moment. Batman, like, stands his ground, right? He's like, do you bleed, right? It's a really crazy and scary line.
Right.
And I feel like that is kind of the height of the conflict thus far, right? Like, they've come face to face in their, like, superhero personas. And Batman refuses to back down, even though he doesn't have the kryptonite yet. And Superman just, like, ended his chances of getting the kryptonite right here, which, you know, probably enraged Batman.
Totally.
But yeah, I think it just goes to set up this further conflict even more.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't get the kryptonite, and he kind of just lets Lex have the kryptonite until the Capitol, and that's when he goes and steals it. And the Capitol's a great scene.
My gosh.
Senator sets up a thing where she gets this guy that Bruce saves at the beginning that was a Wayne employee that's now in a wheelchair and is in a wheelchair because of the Superman fight from Man of Steel. It's a great setup. They're kind of all getting ready, and Superman shows up to be in a hearing and to talk about what's going on in the world. And everyone's like, this is a huge moment. There are a lot of people outside of the Capitol building. But then Lex devises a plan to blow it up with the wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a cool idea. I don't think in Man of Steel they ever established that he couldn't see through lead, did they? I guess if you didn't know, that's one way to show it, right? Is Lois goes like, oh, it was made of lead. That's why you couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's not terrible. And it's a great way to kind of set up this kind of just the spilling of the pot, essentially, right? Everybody's freaking out about Superman now because they suspect him to be a part of this terrorist attack because he can survive the blast. And the Congress people were about to kind of hold him accountable, right, for his actions. And everybody in that room blew up.
Yeah, and like you hear a reporter be like, he started by helping people with the wreckage, but then he disappeared. He actually kind of eats off to go hike a mountain and kind of do some soul searching. And we get what I think is one of my favorite scenes in the DCEU, which is when he's kind of just picturing like what his dad would do. And we get a tiny bit of a setup for this because when he calls his mom earlier in the movie, he's like, why did dad never leave Kansas? And, you know, he's thinking about his dad, right? And this monologue that Jonathan Kent gives is really good. And I think it's very pertinent to the story. And it's basically, yeah, it was raining really bad and our crops were going to get flooded. So I went out with my family and we, with shovels, and we dug it so that we were able to stop the flooding and dam it off. And, you know, everyone was so happy with me. My grandma baked me a hero cake. But what we didn't realize at the time was that we had blocked it, but it just sent it all upstream. And so it flooded the neighbor's farm. And, you know, while I was getting a birthday, or while I was getting a hero cake, their horses were drowning. And it's just kind of that idea of like, yes, like you can have good intentions. There are consequences, whether you like it or not. And you just have to do what you think is the right thing.
Right. And kind of that mentality of like, you can't save everybody. You can't always be on the right side of things.
Yeah, I just really enjoy that bit. But he kind of, well, we don't really see him until Lex is on this building and his plan kind of comes to its climax, where we see Lois and Martha get kidnapped and Lex takes Lois up there and pushes her off, which Superman, then we see him come back and it's this big moment. And Superman's like, what the heck, dude? And Lex is like, well, actually, you're going to go kill Batman for me because I have your mom. And Superman's angry and he's like, I just got to go recruit Batman, right?
Right. This is the moment where I think Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor works the best. Him, like, bending Superman to his whim, right? This whole bit where he has, like, the photos of Martha, and he's, like, making these analogies about, you know, God, like, kneeling to this man in front of him because he's weak like a man. Jesse Eisenberg and that monologue, it was written wonderfully. It was played beautifully. I don't think, like, the Gene Hackman-esque Lex Luthor could have pulled that off.
No, it wouldn't have fit. You're so right.
And, you know, Superman's kind of broken, right? He has this moment where he goes down to Lois, and you can see, like, he doesn't want to do it. He's kind of going to her almost for comfort or almost to, like, tell him to not.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta get him to help, right? Like, that's my last resort.
Right. And he kind of approaches him with, like, a, like, listen, like, you don't understand. And Batman, he's hurt enough, right? Like, you know, from his perspective, he could almost see it as like Superman knows he's beat, right? Because he has the kryptonite and he's just like pleading for mercy or whatnot, right? Just trying to like...
I have never thought of it that way because I've always been like, why does Batman... I mean, I get that he's angry, but like you'd think that if Superman's wanting to talk with him, he would talk back. But I never even thought about that because, yeah, maybe Batman's like, oh, he's just playing weak to get close, or he knows that he's beat, right? And he wants the satisfaction of beating him.
Right. Like it's so, he is so intensely jaded. It tracks for his character thus far, even though we're not sure about why. This fight is, it's fun. It's pretty incredible. I remember that being a big thing talking about when we were kids is like the hypothetical, right? Batman versus Superman, who would win?
Yeah. And this is also like, Dark Knight Returns has a Batman versus Superman fight, and it's great, but yeah, this movie, it's so fun to see it. I think the suit that Batman wears is awesome, and while it can look a little like slow and clunky, I think it still pulls it off, and it's really fun that they actually like made those suits for them to wear. You kind of get that realism texture to it all, which is really great. A lot of people criticize this fight. It's like, oh, they're just punching each other, and like, Yeah, I get that. I mean, I get it, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, Batman and Superman fight is not really plausible outside of a comic book.
Right.
Because you have two characters with vastly different skill sets that are not really compatible in a cinematic way, like, or at least in like a cinematic format.
Right.
Like, it'd be one thing if it was, you know, two flying characters, right? Like Zod and Superman, or, you know, Deathstroke and Batman, where it's like hand-to-hand combat. But I don't know.
That's why I think they were clever in certain moments. They gave Batman the suit of armor, so him getting thrown through walls in that Superman Zod fashion, it worked, right? It was believable that he could survive that.
Yeah.
And then also the hand-to-hand combat, once he hit Superman with the kryptonite gas, was very Batman-esque, right? I feel like they kind of tried to highlight both of their fighting styles in a sense. And it was powerful. I don't think it didn't work, per se.
That's a great point. I think it's just like when Batman gets thrown through the building, you kind of almost want him to like zoom back and start fighting again. But
totally.
They kind of have to like
that slow get up, back up because he's like hurting because he's human.
But I'm with you. Like, it doesn't not work. Like, I still have a fun time with it. It was really fun when we were kids watching it. And for the first like on-screen battle we get, it's solid, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it does the job really well.
And I think in the theater, the thing that like, just I felt triumphant because I had argued for Batman. I'm a hoe for Batman. I love Batman.
Oh yeah, you and me both.
Oh yeah. And I was convinced going into this movie, not knowing the outcome, that Batman would win. There's no way he couldn't, right? I was right, guys. Like, I really was right.
Well, you could make the argument that like, if Superman hadn't held back, would he have won? Who knows?
It's a great question, right? He quite possibly could have taken him out immediately. I have no idea. But in the sequence of events, and had Superman not uttered his mother's name, it would have been over. Batman.
Absolutely. Okay, so the big joke about this movie is the whole Martha thing. I'm going to be honest. Didn't bug me when I first saw it because I was a kid and I just thought everything was awesome, right? As you do. And later, I rewatched it when I was a little bit older and was like, yeah, it doesn't really work for me. And then I read an article or an interview with Zack Snyder, and he was like explaining it how, yeah, Batman sees that he wasn't able to protect his mother. And he sees that now in Superman, where he is now unable to protect his mother. And he sees that, like, he is the one inflicting that.
Right. He's on the one holding the gun in this situation.
Exactly. And I was like, that's so deep. But, like, I wish that would have been clearly conveyed, because that is a really good reason for them to stop fighting.
Well, and I think the tough part is, like, I don't know how I could have done it better. They did all of the cutting back and forth to, like, the original sequence in the beginning.
What I would have done is what I was alluding to earlier, where you just input a conversation with Alfred where they talk about the loss of Jason Todd, the loss of his mother Martha, and Alfred being like, that's why you took up the cape in the first place, not to fight gods, to make sure that nobody has a gun held to their mother's head again, or something. Like, that line could have been like called back to later, or at least just close enough to where it was easily remembered, and it would have come across a lot easier, you know?
That's a fair point, and I think that's a clever way to go about it. Alfred is the perfect character for that to come across through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, what are your thoughts on the Martha thing?
I, being the kid who was fighting vehemently for Batman, I was kind of upset about it because I wanted Batman to win.
Just,
and there
do
was,
it. Yeah.
Right, there was kind of that like small argument that was like, well, technically, he didn't beat him because they worked together in the end. And I was right. Like, no, he beat him. Anyways, it's an intense moment, right? Batman keeps saying, why did you say that name? It's just another reason I don't love Lois, or maybe Amy Adams is, I just, her intersection in this moment, it just felt wholly unnatural. Of course, they're building it up. It makes sense that she was able to get there in the chopper, but her, like, one interjection that's just like, that's his mom. And then it's like, suddenly Batman's just like, oh man. And then it's all over.
What have I done? Like Anakin.
Right. It doesn't feel supernatural. I don't hate the way they did it per se, right? The story's able to progress beyond that. It doesn't ruin the movie for me, but it's a rough moment. I feel like it could have been done better.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like it, if I were to give it like an out of 10, it's like a 4. Like I see where they're going with it. I wish it would have been done better.
Right. The execution was maybe, which yeah, it's whatever. I think the part that kills me immediately after this, right, is Superman gets up. They're just like, oh man, we got to like stop Lex and save his mom. And Batman's like, don't worry, I got your mom, which like leads to one of like the coolest scenes.
Totally.
And then Superman's like, don't worry, I got Lex. And then freaking Lois Lane grabs a crib. And like, obviously she can't know, right, that like this is going to be like the ending to this big old monster that they're not even aware of yet. But the fact that she like goes out of her way to like grab the spear and like find a random room in this building with just full of water just to like get it out of the way, it like sort of makes sense, but I it feels unnecessary from her part. It's over the top, and it feels like a conflict that like could have been avoided had Lois not been Lois. But once again, we've kind of established up until this point, I think I'm just coming to the idea that I don't love her character.
Yeah, that's fair. You're right. It is a bit unnecessary, but they try to do it anyway. And I mean, but you're right. Them splitting off, you got Batman going to the warehouse fight, which is my favorite Batman fight scene. I think it's so awesome. I love the way it moves. And as someone who's played the Batman Arkham games, It felt like that, and I loved it.
Totally. And this is one of like the most brutal displays of Batman's power.
Oh, yeah.
Just absolutely annihilating some of these goons, right? It's not running anybody over with a car. Like, it is ending their lives with his fists.
His aura.
It's fantastic. We have Alfred working kind of the Batwing outside, and we get kind of like this flashing back and forth as the enemies inside are getting like concerned as Batman's getting closer.
I feel like it's very kinetic.
That is a great word for it. And you mentioned that this fight has some more footage that they included in the extended cut that actually was kind of one of the reasons that it like bled into that rated R territory rather than its previous PG-13 theatrical release.
Yeah, a big thing is that bit when he grapples the crate and then just chucks it at the dude's head.
Oh my gosh.
That is in the theatrical cut technically, but in this version, they have blood splattered on the wall afterwards. That is not in the original cut.
Right, which like makes sense. He should have died. But yeah, some really just brutal moments. He grapples through the guy's thigh and lifts him up. It would be so sucky to be a goon in this scenario.
Literally.
So yeah, we get the final confrontation. Batman, his like whole entrance throughout like this entire thing, up through like the main floor into the wall where like Martha's being held, like it's always just unexpected and it's fun. The guy's like, I'll shoot her, I'll do it. And Batman kind of has like, you know, this like classic standoff moment, and he shoots the flamethrower tank and just dives for Martha. It is such a cool scene.
Yeah, it's a cool finale to a cool scene. And I love the line where he's like, I'm a friend of your son. She's like, I figured, the cape. It's just clever.
Clever. And yeah, we get this cut back to like Lex and Superman. Superman's found Lex at the alien ship. And Lex is kind of just like marveling over his like final creation. And he thinks that Superman's too late, right? He showed up 10 seconds past when the timer went off, so obviously Martha is dead and Superman's gonna be upset, but Lex knows he has this backup plan. So Superman comes in and he's like, well, let's hear the news. And he goes to call his goon, and we get, okay, small design note, I love Batman's automated like really dark voice in the suit. It is fantastic.
I feel like it makes sense, right? Instead of like a gargly voice, or right, just like the lower voice of Robert Pattinson's, you get like a literal garbled voice, and right, it works.
I
like
it. It works really well. No hate for Christian Bale, but I think I prefer that to his just like getting like real raspy kind of,
yeah,
I'm Batman.
doesn't always work.
But yeah, we get that over the phone, and you can see Lex just kind of like crumble. Superman has a moment of triumph, right? He's like, you've lost. And Lex just very quickly picks up his like phase two, like, I don't know how to lose. What are your thoughts on the design of Doomsday?
I don't know. He kind of looks like an ugly turd. I just don't really like. I think Doomsday is cool. I've always thought that like the death of Superman was an interesting comic book. I don't know, man. I think it's because it felt like he just shows up to be the thing that they have to team up to fight, and it's not as cool as Mechagodzilla, you know, from Godzilla versus Kong. So like, I don't know. I just don't buy it as easily, but it's cool. It gives us an opportunity to get Wonder Woman into the fray, which is like the coolest entrance ever.
Oh, for sure. That right.
Zimmer cooked with this music.
Oh my gosh. Couldn't agree more. We were talking about how good. That track is just phenomenal on its own. Yeah, I think this is kind of where it's pretty obvious that they're trying to really push that like Justice League feel, and there's a big villain that, you know, they just like, they can't get him alone, but then they have to like team up, that kind of feel. Doomsday is a fantastic villain in general, and I feel like the power design on this one looked cool. I feel like the surges, right, when he got hit and everything.
Right.
The jumping around, the like, he was fast, right? He was able to catch Superman, all those things, but you're right. He's ugly. He's so ugly. And obviously that's, you know, Doomsday isn't supposed to be a looker. I will say, I do think he looks especially cool in almost like his phase two, right? When he gets hit.
The spikes out.
Yeah, gets the hit by the nuke. And I feel like that's kind of his final form. That's the Doomsday I prefer, and that we're probably all a bit more familiar with.
That's true.
But yeah, initially he kind of just looks like the cave troll.
Totally from Fellowship.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, we get just some more, like you said, that Zod Superman kind of fight bit where it's just throwing each other through buildings, a lot of laser eyes. And this is where it kind of loses some of the people that don't love video games, because it feels video game-ish, right?
It really does.
It's a fun bit. And we get this moment where the government has kind of decided, right, they hate Superman. A lot of people are against him. But you can tell that there's a hesitancy when they have the chance to nuke both Superman and Doomsday. He takes them up to space, which is a classic. That's like the most sense-making move Superman could do for Doomsday.
Totally.
And they're like, we could just take them both out right now. And there's hesitation on that. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it just shows that like the vast majority of people can understand that like Superman is someone just trying to do good, and the loss of life is a bad thing, right? Killing a monster, like a literal monster, isn't, like, that's the goal.
Right.
It also, in hindsight, because in Justice League we find out that general is actually John Jones, it kind of makes sense why he would be like, wait a second, guys.
Totally. But, yeah. Totally. And probably just a moment where they realize, you know, Superman may be polarizing when it comes to conflicts of the human race, but when it comes to these kind of conflicts, he is our only hope.
Yeah, you want him around. But yeah, you got, as you mentioned, the spear. It's like a whole kind of unnecessary subplot, but it's meant to ratchet the stakes, and I could see it doing that for some people. I don't think it really works for us, but it's there, it's happening. And it's a good scene where Superman uses the spear to stab Doomsday, and the trio's working together to weaken him enough so he can stab him, and Doomsday stabs him back, but then he uses Doomsday to get closer and therefore like securing his death. And it's a good death. It's very cinematic.
Very cinematic, very intense.
It might not hold the weight that we would want it to, just because it's the second movie.
Right.
And this movie is having to juggle a lot, as we've already discussed, but in a vacuum, it's very well done.
Oh, for sure. And as far as like that Doomsday Superman, Death of Superman arc goes, I feel like the death was, it felt good. It was justified.
For sure. And kind of the last like 10 minutes of the movie are spent with his funeral stuff. And I really enjoy this kind of epilogue where you get the military Superman funeral where everyone's there for it and everyone's mourning the loss. And then you have the private Smallville funeral of Clark Kent, where you have Perry White's there and Lois is there. She finds out that he was going to propose. You've got Batman and Wonder Woman there. It's the private setting is a really cool contrast to the big bombastic military funeral. But yeah, what do you think of the funeral?
You make a great point. I love the juxtaposition here. It is a great visual representation of just the difference between Clark Kent and Superman and kind of what they stood for, who they affected in their world. And honestly, they could have just come out and been like, oh, and guess what? This guy was Superman because he's dead. It doesn't matter now. But he was, you know, Clark Kent was a man to like a lot of these like small town people and to, you know, to Batman, to Wonder Woman, to Lois, to his mom. Like he was a very specific person. So it was important for them to have that smaller funeral.
Yeah, and the bagpipes playing Amazing Grace is like the cherry on top. I love that so much.
It feels classic. It feels right for the Superman funeral. And I love just kind of the decadence and like the pageantry of the Superman funeral, right? Like the silver casket with the emblem. Everybody's there, they're shooting cannons. And then Clark Kent gets like the plainest wooden box.
Yeah, it's so cool. It kind of shows like his humbleness. Like he wasn't jaunting around like I'm Superman, right? Like he wanted a simple life, right? Because he literally on the phone with his mom early in the movie is like, man, I just wish it was simpler, right? I just wish life was simpler.
Yeah, no, like it really like calls out to his roots. I love that it's back in Kansas, the cornfields, like it feels right.
Yeah, and I feel like it's fitting that at his funeral, Batman and Wonder Woman are like, what do we do now? And it's this is kind of where the Dawn of Justice part comes in.
Right, like, which once again, it's to be argued whether or not this whole setup for the Justice League is like a flop or not. I feel like it could have been executed better, but it wasn't like disgraceful to say.
Like I said, like 5 out of 10, maybe, yeah. You know, 5 of 10, because like the idea is there. I don't know.
It's just a meh moment, not a ton of build up previous to that. But I think all of this leads up to one of the coolest ending scenes.
Yes.
Possibly of any superhero movie. I remember losing my mind in the theater after this happened because it's like this really slow and deliberate pan down to the dirt thrown onto Superman's grave. And like we've discussed in the previous ones, right, this is kind of a cool design of like the Henry Cavill Superman, the Man of Steel, is kind of how the earth shifts when he flies, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's such a great, and it's just for like that half second, and then the movie ends and you have the awesome music. I'm with you. It's such a good ending.
Yeah.
So before we get to our final thoughts, I have to ask you, 2016 was the year that superheroes fought one another. You got Batman v Superman and you had Captain America Civil War. Now, my question is not going to be one of which was better, right? Because I think they're trying to do vastly different things. I just wanted to hear your opinion on what worked for one that didn't for the other and vice versa.
Oh,
you okay. Get what I mean? Yeah. Like for me, I really enjoy the kind of the first and second act of this movie. I really enjoy that philosophical question of, you know, what is a superhero's role in our world? I think they play it really well. The conflict's there. The style is there. Although I think that, well, I just mentioned I love the epilogue with the funeral. I think the third act is kind of where it stumbles the most, as opposed to Captain America Civil War. I feel like while I enjoy it more scene to scene, like the first two acts are kind of like, I don't know, they don't work as well for me as far as the main conflict. But they're also like far into their thing, right? Like they don't have to set up basically all these different characters. They do with Spider-Man and Black Panther, but it's done tastefully. But their third act, I think they kill it, right? With the Bucky, Cap, and Iron Man fight. It's such a good third act. And it's a big reason of why that movie is so well loved is the ending. And it's well deserved. As someone that I care a lot more about Superman and Batman than I do the Winter Soldier, like the source of conflict just felt stronger for me in this movie.
You make some great points, and I love that you're comparing these two movies because they were both a big deal at the time, and they are kind of like similar themes on like both sides of kind of the comic book lovers. I think one of the strongest things that Civil War had going for it, obviously, right, is the setup. Right, they have all the movies previous to that. You have all these characters that have been well established. I think what they had going for them was the question of like submission to authority. There was a side that was willing to, right? And that was where the conflict was. It wasn't just the government being like, hey, like you maybe shouldn't, because Batman wasn't submitting to the government. He was technically working with the police-ish.
Right.
But like neither of them were like, you know, taking orders from anybody. And they also have the team element, which I think lends itself to a lot of new perspectives. It's not just like two very hard-headed characters, which obviously is how Civil War ends, right? Is with that fantastic fight between Iron Man, Captain America, and Bucky. But that's kind of like the buildup in Batman versus Superman.
So it's almost like the opposite if you think about it. Like Civil War starts off with the team dynamic. You get all these different perspectives on the conflict. But by the end, it knows that the right thing to do is to focus on a personal conflict between as few characters as possible to really land that home run.
Right.
Whereas Batman v Superman kind of starts off with the personal two-character conflict, and then at the end is like trying to expand it into more. I don't know.
Right. They're kind of adding like Wonder Woman's thoughts on like the whole situation they have, right? Like the government and the people and like what they think about, you know, killing off Superman and what these superheroes mean. It's like, you make a good point. It is very personalized. The whole theme of this has kind of been like, you know, Perry White and all the people kind of shutting down his Superman's like attempts to be like, I don't know about Batman, and Alfred and all the people in Batman's life being like, you know, just like cool it on Superman. Right.
Right.
And then like finally in the end, after all this like personal, like very stubborn individual hatred, they kind of duke it out. But then, I think it's maybe the turn where they end up teaming up. That does not happen in Civil War.
That's a good point, right? Because in Civil War, they're in the middle of their cinematic universe. They can afford. So when you have a trilogy structure, it is kind of like writing 101 to make sure that that second movie ends with the heroes like flat on their butt, right? That's why you got Empire Strikes Back ends the way it does. That's just what makes a good, or that's like kind of this basic structure of a trilogy. This is kind of that moment for the MCU is Civil War at the end. They have the heroes broken up. They're scattered. They're not teamed up. Although at like the very end, you kind of get that weird like letter that Cap writes to Tony and he's just like, I'll be there if you need me. And it's like a soft team up, but
it's like a small, like olive branch, right? There's hope a little bit, but you're right. Like
but they're allowed to break it off.
Yeah. Like the whole denouement is both teams like surviving the aftermath of this epic collision. And it's like, nobody won, right? There was no team up. There was no like greater ally. And I think the overarching discussion is that Batman versus Superman really tried to jam too much into one movie and not every arc fit.
Right. Like that movie, if it had shown up a couple movies down the line, it might have hit different. They might have been able to do something different with it. I think that they couldn't have ended it with them being separated, obviously, right? They're trying to get their Justice League going. But it's such a tricky...
I think bare bones, at the very least, if they'd given Ben Affleck Batman his own movie previous to this, it would have meant a world's difference for this movie.
I agree.
Because having next to no previous introduction for his character, we obviously get the small amount of backstory in the beginning, but the motivations, right, like his part in the conflict doesn't feel as well fleshed out. Whereas like Man of Steel, you have a great movie. You have like Zod is like the reincarnated villain, right? Like it's all these great moments and you know Henry Cavill struggles.
Yeah, I was just curious because I enjoy both movies a lot. And I think that Captain America Civil War is technically like the better made movie. I was just curious, like, because they have to do different things, but people like to compare them just because they came out in the same year and it's superheroes fighting each other. But I don't know, a fun thought exercise.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up. Thoroughly enjoy each movie for different reasons. And I'm kind of with you there that Civil War just kind of stuck the landing a bit better.
Yeah, but overall, I really enjoy this movie. I don't know how I would place it as a Superman movie. I think it brings a lot of the stuff that I do like about Superman into it as far as like philosophical stuff and some action set pieces and, of course, Lex Luthor. But it's hard to judge it based on its own. But I think overall it is a good, unless in the future there is a similar premise that is done much better, I think this is like a must watch for superhero fans.
Oh, for sure. It's a great concept, and I think for the whole Death of Superman arc, it works well, you know, his standalone story throughout, right? The fight with Batman and everything, it makes sense. And once again, some really cool, really cinematic scenes, and though not everybody loves this movie, it does feel kind of necessary for the fleshing out of Superman's character, just because it really involves the dynamics of other superheroes, and I feel like that's kind of an overarching concept that we've yet to touch on.
Yeah, and we got to remember that, like, we were at the prime age when this came out to just, like, love it, and that probably is, you know, influencing our opinions a little bit, but it's our opinions, so.
I think it's the same reason that, you know, like, our parents have such an adoration for Christopher Reeve's Superman, whereas, you know, we're watching them, we're maybe a bit more critical just because they're less important, less nostalgic. I'm totally open to that.
Yeah, who knows? When we show our kids this movie, they'll probably think it's a joke, but whatever.
Yeah, I guess we'll see if this James Gunn Superman is such a home run that they have something else to love.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, overall, I think it's a relatively easy recommend. Obviously, it's asking a lot, having somebody sit through the extended edition, but I feel like it was well done.
Yeah, extended cut is definitely the way to go with this one. But yeah, with that being said, thank you guys so much for sticking around and listening to this episode of Podcast on Infinite Earths. Next week, in, you know, the penultimate before we get to watch Superman, which we are super excited for, we're going to kind of just spend an episode going over all of the Supermans we watched for our watch through leading up to this, and we're going to rank them based on how much we liked them. We'll get to discuss what we liked, what worked, what doesn't work, and, you know, what pieces we hope to see in the new movie, what we hope the new movie does better. It'll just kind of be a fun chat before the new movie, and we can all get excited about it.
Looking forward to it.